Hey, very good afternoon. About a month ago, I was given the heads up by a good friend of mine, Tans, about the potential of interviewing Rio Ferdinand, and I thought, sensational. What a career he's had. 6 Premier League titles, 2008 skippered Man U to the champions of Europe, as far as that competition was concerned, 81 caps for England, a guy that was just immense at the back for so many seasons, who signed the biggest ever contract, £30 million at the time, transfer fee from West Ham to join the world's most famous footballing club, Manchester United. But then, of course, I started looking behind the scenes and what really went on with his life. The loss of his wife, Rebecca, at 34 to breast cancer. She had beat him. She had fought it in 2013 and 2015. It came back with a vengeance. It changed his life forever. That moment he got the phone call, your wife, Rebecca, has been rushed to hospital. In the weeks that followed, she went downhill. He then had to explain to his children on a particular day, you have to say goodbye to mummy. But here's the thing about Rio. His entire life had been built around football. Everything about him was manufactured in a way to make him into the very best footballer he could be. For example, Rebecca's life. She knew she had to give him exactly the right carb intake the day before a big match. He needed exactly 2 hours sleep at the end of every training session. Thou did not interrupt Rio Ferdinand when he was sleeping post a training session. Everything about his life was about being a top footballer. He could not stand weakness. He could not stand anybody that was emotional or vulnerable. As he says in the book, that if you were with Manchester United and you showed any sign of vulnerability, you were simply dispensed of. You did not survive. Cristiano Ronaldo, when he joined the club as a 17-year-old, a prodigious talent, the major leaders of the team basically ganged up on Cristiano. Said, mate, it's not about showboating. It's not about being an entertainer. It's not about celebrating the goals and getting your youthful six-pack out. It's about running back and defending. It's about being the complete footballer. Rio was a cold-hearted assassin as far as the game was concerned. In the dressing sheds, he couldn't stand it when he'd hear a player talk about wanting to go out and celebrate and party when they'd just lost a game of football. In his mind, that was repulsive. He couldn't handle losing full stop. He says it was a mixture of paranoia and shame when they lost a game of football. So imagine this individual, a guy who doesn't show any emotion at all, believes winning is everything. All of a sudden, he loses his wife to cancer, his supportive best friend. He couldn't do anything. He couldn't, for example, get himself checked into an airport because Man U had done that through his entire professional career. He didn't know how to work the washing machine. That was done by Rebecca. In his words, he felt useless. He didn't know how to best deal with this for his kids' sakes. How do you get emotion out there? How does he react as a father? That took him on a journey of discovery. Yes, I'm sounding very deep and philosophical, but I found this book to be amazing. Thinking out loud for all sorts of reasons, and I think it'll appeal to all sorts of people out there for this. He had to change who he was so that he became a mother and a father for his children, if that makes sense. A mother and a father for his children. So he signed up to a documentary with the BBC about grieving fathers in the same situation that he has. He dealt and spoke with Darren Clark, the Northern Irish golfer who lost his wife as well to cancer. A life-changing moment for him. The documentary was incredible. It is so emotional. 8 million people in the UK watched it on the opening night. Millions more have watched it online since. And that led to this book, as I said, about helping men talk about things. Here's the quote in the book for me, and there's one of a billion quotes in this book. Why is it okay to cry at a football match when your team loses, but it's not okay to cry when you lose your wife to cancer? Doesn't that just sum it up? So on Thursday night, at around about 11:30 at night, I got to sit down and chat with Rio Ferdinand. As I said, just an amazing insight into what he has been through, but most importantly, how he has changed his life, how he has opened up as a person, and how he has had to become a better father. Guys, enjoy Rio Ferdinand, life inside Manchester United, life as a pro footballer, and life without his wife, Rebecca.
This isn't the gospel on how you deal with losing someone or tragedy in your life. This is just my personal feelings. And when I was going through the documentary on that journey, I learned a lot from the people that had actually been through what I've been through. So this has been a good journey so far.
I've got to say, Rio, when I think about this interview and I think about what you've done with the documentary and the book as well, through your career, you would have made millions of fans. I mean, Manchester United and New Zealand Rio, you're probably aware, is massively followed over here. You would have made fans happy, frustrated, elated during those wonderful times when you won Premier League titles. But for me, this book and this documentary, what you have done is quite possibly changed lives, Rio.
Yeah, well, I think with football, it gives you an emotion that not many things can give you when you win. It's an instant adulation, it's instant like crazy feeling, but then it's kind of gone in a quick period of time. Whereas hopefully this documentary and this book have long-lasting effects on people. I met a girl called Emily through Child Bereavement UK, who will have a lifelong effect on me and my kids in terms of introducing the memory box to us, the memory jar. And I hope that there'll be something in this book that will have an effect on someone else in that way.
Because, Rio, what's happening in New Zealand at the moment, we've got massive suicide issues, particularly amongst our youth. Now, there's also impacting on a lot of young footballers as well. When I talk about the codes, rugby and rugby league, guys that are taking their lives simply because they're not taught how to deal with issues in their life, failure in their life. Now, Rio, for me, when somebody reads this book, all of a sudden, it's a lesson that you learned. It's okay to be open.
Yeah, it is. And I found that hard. So I'll understand a lot of the people you're talking about. I found it hard when I was playing, growing up, because I'd never seen emotion in my house, really. I'd never seen love and affection in a cuddly, fluffy way. So I did find that difficult. But through going through what I've been through, I've had to open up channels to make myself aware that emotion is fine and then become a doer. And so I've incorporated that in my life on a day-to-day basis now in saying to my children and saying to myself, firstly, it is okay to be open. It's okay to be emotional. It's okay to cry. It's okay to ask for help. How do I get help? Where do I get it? It's okay to be like that. It doesn't make you any less of a man or woman. But what it will do, it will have a greater impact on your life going forward, personally, but also for those around you.
Because I'm reading a couple of lines from the book which really stuck out for me. As a professional footballer, quote unquote, you say, you don't learn to hide your emotions, you learn not to have them at all. You also talk about when you're in the Manchester United dressing sheds, I mean, this colossal club, that basically there was no room for sympathy here. So, I mean, were you almost taught to be robotic in your ways and means you were to win football games? That was what your life was?
Yeah, you were, but you wasn't taught. You were just conditioned through the environment you were in. I would never say that throughout service or there was anyone in the club saying you have to do that. It was just an inherent way of acting, the way he was, to become successful. And that's the way it was formed. And I think that our main goal as individuals and collectively was to win. And to do that, you had to take emotion out of a lot of things. Now, if a guy was coming into the training ground with stuff on their mind or things going on at home, but me as a player, I wouldn't really consider that. I wouldn't say, oh, you know what, let's take it easy on him today because he's going to be a problem in terms of winning a game which will have an impact on me winning a trophy. So therefore, probably best keeping him out. Get him out. Don't have him here. And that's just the cold light of day how it was. And would I change that if I could do it all again? I would only want to change it if it meant that I could still win. But I think you've still got to find, it's just finding that balance. If I could just get to the front door and leave all of that intensity and that single-mindedness, that drive at the front door and go to my home life and be very open and emotional and just chilled and laid back, then I would do that. But I think it's a difficult thing to find, and balance is very key in that.
But here's the thing, Rio. Would you have become the footballer you were, 81 caps for England, 6 Premier League titles, Champion League victorious in 2008, would you have become that footballer if you weren't as hard-nosed, as cold as maybe you describe yourself in the book?
I wouldn't have been that, and I wouldn't have been as successful if I wasn't as cold and intense around a training ground or within football. But my problem was that carried on into my home life. So if I could change anything, it would be, as I said, it would be to be cold and intense the way I was at football, but have a break when I got home. And that would have been great, I think, for all concerned in terms of me, my family, etc. And hopefully I would have been able to be as consistent and as successful. But you just don't know. This is all questions that someone else is going to have to find out and try and put to the test.
Because Rio, it's heartbreaking when I read the book, and I did. I found it incredibly emotional because you talk about, you know, your life with Rebecca post your career, the sacrifices she gave up, the things that you missed for your footballing career. I mean, you missed the birth of one of your children, you missed your grandmother's funeral as well. When you look back on that now, we all have that balance in life now, Rio, where we think that work is everything. We've got to succeed. We've got to be A-type personalities. Would you change any of that now, given the fact that you never got the chance to enjoy those cherished retirement years with Rebecca?
Of course, you'd love to change that, but I think at the end of the day, we both made a decision as a family that we were going to... I was able to be as committed as I was, as driven, as single-minded as I was, with the thought that we would be able to enjoy a normal family life when I retire. I'll do the same thing, but who knows what's coming up? Who knows what's around the corner? And we wasn't to know that cancer was going to take your record away the way it did, and so quickly. So that's obviously something that you sit and you play with in your mind and go over. But I'm more of the thinking of, instead of looking back, just trying to look forward and try and make sure that mistakes that I've made personally as a family aren't made again going forward.
One of the things, Rio, that I found remarkable in your story is that you're still playing at the elite level, you're still playing for Manchester United, but you're going through this private torment around Rebecca's illness. Now, the only people you told was a teammate, David Moyes, who was coming in as your manager, Sir Alex Ferguson. They were the only people, and it sort of drew comparisons for me of Jonah Lomu, and I'm sure you know Jonah's story where, Jonah got kidney illness. Now, I remember interviewing his doctor, Doc Mayhew, about this. He refused to allow anybody else in his team to know that he was battling kidney illness because he didn't want to seem weak. He didn't want the players to feel any sympathy. The comparisons with you are stark.
Yeah, they're the exact same things that I wanted. I refused to let everybody know because I didn't want to walk in under a cloud of people feeling sorry for me, sympathy. I didn't want that. And that was my place of kind of respite where I went and trained and I had that 2 hours where I was concentrating on something else other than all the stuff that was going on in my life at that time with Rebecca. So, and Rebecca was adamant that we kept our life as normal as possible while she was in hospital, even for the children, so they didn't panic or become stressed or seeing something different in their life because they were so used to structure and routine. So I understand totally, and the comparisons there with Jonah are, as you say, stark.
Rio Ferdinand with us as we go through this incredible book, and the BBC documentary, by the way, guys, if you haven't seen it, it is just a wonderful watch. The book is called Thinking Out Loud. Rio, in terms of this for you, I'm just trying to put this into perspective for the listeners who have not read this book yet. You describe yourself as fanatically private. So for you to not only do the documentary, and we'll get onto that, but to write this book, I mean, this is so far out of your comfort zone. I can't even explain that to people, how out there this was for you to do.
Yeah, because I wasn't interested in doing things like OK Magazine and Hello. I don't know if you've got them where you are. You may have, but just where it's like thirsty pictures of the family at home with the Ferdinand. That wasn't what I was about. I was solely interested in just playing football and being as successful as I can. So for me then to come out of that and make my life public with this documentary and with the book was so different and so far from what I was used to. But it was always in the mind of helping other people, and that was the only reason I was willing to do it, that it would help my children. They needed it more than anyone in my life, but also it was therapeutic for me, but also to help other people down the line. So those three factors, I think, were compelling and the reasons why we did go on this journey of making the documentary and the book.
Has it opened your eyes in terms of the influence a sports person can have? Now, clearly you were followed. As I said, you were part of the greatest footballing club history has really known in terms of its worldwide global appeal. But the fact is, Rio, when you look at even what's going on with the NFL at the moment, about the way those players are using their profile for right or wrong, people can debate and argue politics and sport. But again, you're able to use your enormous influence. You've got 20 million followers on social media. People can sit back and say, actually, Rio Ferdinand, if he can open up, so can I.
Yeah, I think I've always been of the mind. That's why I first got involved in social media at the very beginning, and because I was quite open to it being a platform where people can use the leverage that they have, the profile that they have, to make good and to speak out on subjects that they were passionate about. And this is obviously one. And I thought that, listen, if I've got that platform, why not use it for this and make people aware of especially men, opening up about their emotions, becoming softer people, speaking, crying, etc. And I think these are so important. And like you said before, there's a lot of people, especially young males, who are finding it difficult to do that, and sometimes need that push by someone in so left field that they didn't expect to say something like that. A sportsman who they see as a bit macho, where it's not meant to happen. We've got a campaign here that's headed up by the royal family, the princes, called Heads Together, which is about mental health. And I think it's the topic of the month at the moment. And I think we have to make sure that hits home and that it is okay to do all the things that I mentioned before.
Well, it's huge, as I say, in New Zealand at the moment, Rio. It is massive. Mental health is just a huge, monumental problem that I don't think we're even sure how to overcome. But when you look at sport as well, I mean, we look at your lives and we think it must be perfect. The bells and whistles. I mean, when you signed from West Ham to Manchester United, everyone talked up your salary. Life could not be more perfect. But we know, Rio, that is not the case. I mean, I speak to a lot of sports people in New Zealand that never share their personal pain.
Yeah, and I think it's that's I think it's detrimental not only to your health but also to your work life. I think you've got to feel free enough to be able to do that and open up. And what it does is that you've got to speak to people and find out what it's done for them when they've excelled, when they've showed emotion. It is like a huge weight off your shoulders, and you become almost lighter, and you feel to yourself, right, I can actually move on now and enjoy parts of your life that you never seemed imaginable before you'd shown emotion. So I think, as I said, sport has such a huge part to play in changing people's perception and opinions on issues like mental health. And instead of making it a taboo or something you don't talk about, it's got to be a conversation now.
Guys, former international Rio Ferdinand is my guest. This is a chat I had just before midnight on Thursday night on the release of his new book. It is called Thinking Out Loud. I found it incredibly emotional. I say this, I found certain parts of it really difficult to read because I think it just hits home to all of us about the battles and the struggles of life and how he has turned himself around, just so open, so brave to have done this book and done this documentary and the way that it's probably changed many lives as well. When we come back, I chat with Rio about a whole heap of things. What was the reaction of his teammates who didn't know any of this was going on, did not know that Rio was dealing with this private torment at Manchester United, playing his football, but while he knew his wife was about to leave him. Also the perception, and this is fascinating, that i.e. Wayne Rooney, when he signed those new deals with Man U, was earning £300,000 a week. Obviously, when you're playing for the best football club, the most prominent, dominant football club in the world, you would argue, you'd be talking about money and cash and all of it. That didn't happen. In fact, it was Queen's Park Rangers, a lesser light, where he was absolutely exasperated because that's what they did talk about in the changing rooms. At Man U, that was never condoned. You had a job to do and that was to win football matches. We'll talk to him about that as well. And about life now, about how he's moving on and the influence he is having over others. Welcome the life the of Rio Ferdinand. 81 caps for England. The best part of his career spent with a pretty handy club in Manchester United, which delivered him 6 Premier League titles. This guy that was absolutely cutthroat. Winning, winning, winning. That was his life. This chat, though, is about how he had to change himself. His book is called Thinking Out Loud. It is the most powerful. It is the most emotive read. How he was forced into becoming a more open man because of the loss of his wife, Rebecca. This, though, is also about his footballing career. Inside the changing rooms of Manchester United, the perception they were all about the cash and the cars and the flash girls and all of it. That wasn't the case. That, in fact, was other Premier League clubs. We'll talk about that, how he despised people ever wanting to go out after a loss, and how he believes that football has a duty of care to the players to make sure they are much more well-rounded than what he was during his playing days. Let's rejoin the conversation. So what was the reaction of his good mates at Manchester United, his teammates, when they found out what he was going through and how he had kept it away from them, i.e. the fact that he was losing his wife in the midst of a football season?
Yeah, a lot of them were like, why didn't you say something? But as I said, I was protecting myself as much as I was trying to protect them, maybe. And I think it wasn't something that I found easy to talk about. And I think that you've got to, at the time I was thinking, I want this to be a place of respite and not want any type of sympathy. But I think it's a club's duty, I think it's sports duty to really soften them walls within the football clubs to be able to say, listen, there is somewhere to go here that you can actually talk.
Because you mentioned in this, you believe that the clubs, and I'm assuming this broadens out to all sport, have a responsibility to make footballers or help turn footballers into more balanced characters. What do you actually mean in terms of how far should the responsibility of the club go so that you're not producing these guys that maybe were like you, Rio, that their entire life was winning football games? That was it.
The problem is, I think, especially with sport, I was guilty of it a lot as well, is it's very judgmental. I think football has a duty to stop producing like dysfunctional men. I think that that's what it's done over the years. I think that it's because people become scared to speak out, because not only will the fans speak out against it maybe or have a judgmental about it, but the players will be, the coaching staff will be, the hierarchy that run the club will be, and that maybe will have then an effect in terms of a contract going forward. There's so many different domino effects based on you coming out and showing people your feelings and how you are and what's happening with your life, that it actually then becomes a problem where people just keep it in, and I don't think you're getting the best out of that individual when that happens.
Because one of the things, and I find this really interesting as this mixes and melds in between what you speak about in the book and your footballing career, you couldn't handle, for example, people that would plan their nights out after a loss. You would go home, and basically I use this word respectfully, Rio, but you'd go home and sulk because you hated losing. You said it was a toxic blend of shame, paranoia and humiliation. In some ways, yeah. Now, do you look back at that and think, maybe I went too far? Or again, do I sit back and say, no, that is what defined you as a footballer?
I think that's what defined me as a footballer. That's what made me tick. That's what made me sustain a level of consistency at the top. But again, I think it's about finding the balance. Could I have maybe softened that when I got home? I did actually soften that a little bit once I had children. But still, it would have played a huge part in my life, and even on the school run, even as news agents, looking across the counter, thinking, what's this guy going to say? He's a fan of an opposing team, etc. And your pride shot out. But I do think, if you're going to be a top professional, losing has to hurt.
Because as well, and this is interesting as well, Manchester United, we have this perception now, you know, for example, Wayne Rooney, your old teammate, whenever his salary went up, it was always publicised through all the British tabloids, always on £250,000 or £300,000 a week. But you talk about in the book as well, you say that Man U didn't have that ethic in talking about, oh, what are you on, Rio? What are you on, Wayne? You said you only really found that when you went to QPR, when they talked about things like, where are we going tonight? How big's your car? How fancy's your house? All of that. United was very much about almost a metronomic club in terms of, we've just got to win.
Yeah, I don't believe that top successful sportsmen who stay there at the top are driven by money. I think they're driven by success, by winning trophies. That's all I cared about. I'll be judged not on my salary or how much money I've earned. I'll be judged on what I've won, and that's a legacy. And I think that's not created by finance. And I think that's the key thing. And I think at Manchester United, I'd never heard anybody speak about, oh, what you want? What are you earning? That doesn't happen. I'd find that embarrassing. I'd find that, like, what are you talking about? I'd shut that down, that conversation straight away. But that wouldn't happen at somewhere like Manchester United. If you're successful, you're going to earn good money in football. That's just the way it is.
Rio, your kids, have they seen the documentary when they get old enough? Have they read the book? And what do you think when they do both in terms of what they'll think of Dad? I imagine they're going to be incredibly proud.
I hope so, but I think they would have learned something. They'll learn about me, just like I've learned about my dad in this process. I've had to speak to my dad about things that I haven't spoken about before, about why he was the way he was in certain situations, why he was so emotionless at times. He didn't show love in the way that is considered showing love in the world today, with cuddles and big fluffy things, and he wasn't like that. He was quite cold in that. I had to dig a little deeper to find out through doing the book. So hopefully my children find out a lot more from me for reading the book. And yeah, if they're proud, then I'll be, oh no, I've done something right with that. So I can't wait for that moment. My kids are 11, 9 and 6, so they've not reading the book properly yet, where they'll digest it properly, but they've seen visuals for the documentary and enough in that to get a little taste.
Because when I was watching it, I was thinking, Rio, you must worry about how they're going to be when they get to 17, 18, 19, when kids are going through that amazing transformation in life, how they're going to deal when they look back at, you know, did you do the right thing? Did you give them the right messages explaining how they lost their mum? I just can't even imagine how you did that.
Yeah, and I just hope when they look back, they'll still, no matter if they think my dad could have done that better or he could have done that differently, but that they'll know through the book especially that I've done things with them in mind and that the right intentions, and I think that's key. I'm not doing anything right now from a selfish point of view as much as I can, and I think it's, I do have them at the forefront of my mind whenever I'm making a decision or making a step in a direction. They're part of that. I have to talk to them, consult them almost, and go forward like that.
Rio, just finally, I just want to ask you about the dads that you met that have been through the same grieving process. That seems to me that changed your life in so many ways.
Yeah, meeting the other widowers was definitely a huge thing. I went round there for lunch. We all took a dish each, and we just got speaking, really, and it just really showed me that people, no matter what, how long you've been going through this process of after a tragedy in your life, is that there is no one can put a time on anything, and I think it's always down to the individual to move forward at the pace that suits them. You're always going to be the deciding factor in that, and it's only you that can say when is the right time to, for instance, not wear your wedding ring, when is the right time to start beginning a new relationship or to even think of a new relationship, when is the right time to... there's so many different things, but I found out so many really good bits of information from them, people that have been through that. And I think as important, maybe more important for me personally, was seeing Darren Clark, a professional golfer.
Yeah.
Many, many parallels with my life in terms of him being away from his children for so long, travelling around the world, doing the sport that he loves and missing out on a lot of things throughout the growth of their kids. And then being thrown into this situation where he was the only parent left. And he just gave me a real sense of it is okay to smile and it is okay to believe and be open to the fact that you may one day be as happy as you was before. And I didn't believe that up until meeting him. So again, meeting people who had been through this experience was key to me being able to make the right steps forward.
Yeah, it sounded like that was an incredible experience. And he said to you, look, you can't continue to feel guilty.
Yeah, exactly. And that's huge. And when someone who's actually lived and breathed the steps that you're taking says something like that, that there's no more powerful words.
Rio, I just want to say this to you. I wonder through your career, and I've thought long and hard about this interview, and as I said, I just found it to be an amazing read, and I've read a lot of these books when it comes to sporting biographies, but this isn't one. This is completely different. When you look at your career, what you achieved, and you look at what you've now done in terms of the numbers that watched the documentary, I think 6.5 million on the first night, millions more would have watched it online. Do you feel a sense of utter pride that maybe this could be your crowning achievement in terms of utter adversity out of one of the most horrific things you could go through, you have helped with greater good? I know that sounds very deep and philosophical, but it's the way I feel.
Yeah, I really do hope that is the case. And I think in terms of the response has been so overwhelming from the public, either at the Squanner School Path, whether it be in the supermarkets, in hotels, in airports. A lot of people have come up to me, big burly men with tears, older ladies, women who come up to me and say, you know what, it's a great watch, I can't wait for the book, or I've read the book, you know what, this is going to be passed on to my husband, he's going to watch that, he's going to read that, because I want him to be well versed and to understand what it could be like and be ready if, God forbid, anything was to happen. I think that's the rewarding part for me, that's the rewarding part for the reasons why I've gone on this journey since the tragedy, and hopefully they will have a continuing and lasting effect on people.